Welcome back to America's leading higher education podcast, The EdUp Experience, where we make education your business. Hosts Dr. Joe Salustio, Elizabeth Leiba, and producer Elvin Freites bring you the brightest and most influential minds in higher education today. We explore innovations, ideas, and issues in higher education and beyond, and hopefully have a little fun along the way. Now let's get to it. If you walk by a homeless person and say, somebody should do something, you're right. If you say, I should do something, we should talk. We're Claremont Lincoln University, and we're offering a dynamic new online Master in Public Administration program that is designed to empower the next generation of changemakers, people like you. CLU is online by design, with faculty that are scholar practitioners who are on the front lines. This isn't theory, this is reality. So if you're ready for a new MPA program that makes everything else seem old school, go to claremontlincoln.edu today, because it's time for a change. Find out more at claremontlincoln.edu/MPA. Welcome back, everybody. This is the EdUp Experience, where we make education your business, interviewing the brightest and most influential minds in higher education and beyond. We do like to have a little bit of fun along the way. My name is Dr. Joe Salustio. Always with me, the phenom, Liz. How are you today?
I'm doing amazing. I love how you stretch that out, Liz. That's like, actually, you need to keep that in your repertoire.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's like, it kind of goes along with your, you know, you've been making really oddball requests lately, Liz, I've noticed. New microphones, yes. Only green M&Ms.
I'm like the Beyonce. I'm like the Beyonce of podcasting. Mm-hmm. I only eat green M&Ms now.
Because only green M&Ms.
Very tasty.
You've asked for an EdUp Experience swag that we
have. Yes, where's my swag? I need a t-shirt and a mug.
You wanted a business card that said, you know, a co-owner and best host. And I was like, I am not printing something that says best host on it for you.
Well, I mean, I feel like we're equal. I don't care if it says co-owner. It just has to say best host and that I'm your mentor.
I know. That didn't
fit. You're Luke Skywalker.
That didn't fit in the graphic design I was putting together,
so
I
left that off. I know.
Anyway, you're 40,000. As soon as you hit 40,000 followers on LinkedIn, it's like just the requests started coming in left and right. Liz, we're going to try to accommodate you.
The weird thing is I think I have about 50,000, close to 50,000 now, so I don't know.
Yes, I'm sure that's true because I've gone up by like 100 or so. So I'm sure you've gone up by 10,000. But we'll leave that for another discussion. You did commit many, many episodes ago to help me increase my LinkedIn followers. That still has not happened. What has happened is me sending you green M&M. So I don't know where you begin now to deliver on your end of the bargain.
But you know who can deliver on some great information about enrollment, marketing, and admissions for us today?
I do know. And thank you for that transition. To our guest, that's Liz's cue that she's done taking it.
I'm done with that.
Our guest today, her name is Tara Ames Durante, and she's founder and president of Caris Communications. Tara, how you doing?
Wonderful. How are you?
Are you sure you want to come into this mess of a podcast?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think you're going to welcome you with open arms, aren't you?
You're all of course. All right.
Absolutely.
It's like the jaws of a shark opening wide to bring you in.
I'm ready.
She's ready. Oh, okay, that's a challenge. She threw down the gauntlet for you, Joe. And you know what? It's Women's History Month, so what we might just do is exclude you out of the conversation.
There's some things that just never change around this here. Tara, we want to get right into it with you because you've got just a really interesting background. You have enrollment, marketing, communications, financial aid experience. Basically, in my mind, the differentiators for a survive and thrive foundation for colleges and universities during and post-pandemic. Before we get into that part, I go to your LinkedIn, I go to everybody's LinkedIn profile, and you have financial aid whisperer on your LinkedIn profile. So I got to ask her, what is a financial aid? I get the significance, but talk to me about your financial aid experience and why you have financial aid whisperer up there, because it's super catchy.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And thanks again for having me on today. Financial Aid Whisperer is probably close to what you're imagining. And what it means to me is the ability to digest all of the really complex and regulatory information about financial aid and how it works, and translate that for families and students and school counselors who are trying to decipher this very important topic in order to make decisions about where to apply and where to enroll.
How complicated is it these days? I mean, you know, you've got, I'm sure, a slate of clients. I don't know any college or university that's not struggling right now to keep their enrollments up, unless you're, you know, one of the elite, quote unquote, elite institutions that saw pretty significant growth in applications. The majority of U.S. colleges are seeing enrollment decline, really scrambling to increase enrollment. How hard is it right now out there to recruit and keep a student amidst all of the change we're experiencing?
You know, it's really hard, Joe. And one of the things that you mentioned about applications being up at some colleges is really interesting to dig into from the perspective of competition. And I'd love to talk more about financial aid applications as it relates to this. But what I'm seeing is that applications are up across the board. Whether an individual college is seeing their applications up or not, it depends on the college. But across the board, we're seeing the number of applications are up about 10% over last year, as reported by the Common App. However, that's more applications, that's not more applicants. So the number of applicants only went up 1%. So colleges are still going to be competing, and they're going to be competing more than they have ever in the past. In fact, I would bet that this is the most competitive yield season in the history of higher education.
Distill that down for me. I understand what you're saying, but when, you know, there may be some people that just go, there's more applications, but not necessarily more applicants. Talk to me about that designation in the cycle, if you will.
Sure. So, I mean, in terms of the cycle, when students go to apply in the fall, they are building their list, and students who are meeting with a school counselor or a college advisor, that's, you know, those people and their family, they're going to help them build that list. And for most students, the average number of schools they apply to is 5 or 6. The number of applications on average per student went up about 20% this year, but for some students, it went up, you know, from, they are applying to 20 colleges. This year, they're applying to 30 colleges. So imagine that you're a college admitting students. In previous years, you know that maybe each student you admit would apply to 5 or 6 colleges. If that went up 20% this year, then you are competing to yield those students. So every student that you admit got into more colleges probably than in any other previous application season. So when the students are trying to make a decision, they're trying to figure out what the most important factor is. And I don't know about you, but what do you do during times of uncertainty? When you're not sure what's going to happen, you tend to hedge your bets. So you apply to more colleges, you wait for more colleges to give you perks or rewards. And so, you know, this is probably the most uncertainty that we've had in arguably 100 years. And it's causing families to hedge their bets in ways that I'm not sure colleges are prepared to deal with from a competitive point of view.
Right. And of course, and Liz, I'll pass to you in a second, but of course, amongst what makes it difficult too for anybody in enrollment or enrollment management is predictive models. And you're trying to predict your yield based on history, right? History is the best predictor of future performance, except right now. Because of what you're saying, you've got folks out there, students hedging your bet. You think they might be coming to you, but you don't know that for sure because of how many other schools they've been accepted into. And maybe they want to have on-ground classes and they're waiting to see who comes back on ground. And maybe they want certain programs online or they're waiting to see who's got the best program online. And they sit and they wait and you think they're going to choose you and they ultimately don't. It makes predicting that yield very difficult.
That's correct. I mean, from just like a data science, I'm not a data scientist, but from a statistical standpoint, this year is an outlier in almost every way, between the pandemic, the economy, the surge of test optional designations for schools, the decision from NACAC to release member schools from adhering to their ethical guidelines. All of those factors are at work at making this the most unpredictable. I know that we hate that word now in pandemic times, but it is the most unpredictable and competitive yield season historically that I can see as I look back. And so you're competing with other colleges for these students more than you think. And how you talk about cost and value and financial aid is going to be more important than ever in the past. And I think it's the hardest thing to talk about in enrollment communications.
My question, and I guess I like Joe, I like to LinkedIn stalk. So I'm always like curious as to the headline and what someone's core strengths and values are. What are your thoughts about when we're thinking about these students and distinguishing between how we can set ourselves in the sector, how we can set ourselves apart from all these, how the pandemic has really shifted? I think Joe talks about this a lot, the consumer mindset and how a lot of students and even parents are being a lot more discerning about how they're picking and how they're selecting and what they're doing as far as the whole cycle and the whole process of applying to school, figuring out where you're going to go, weighing up all your options has become so much more placed in the hands of the student as opposed to us kind of sitting back. And I think a lot of us have kind of reimagined that anyway because of the declining students already before the declining enrollments already before the pandemic, especially after. I saw that you do curriculum design and you talk about that on your profile, on your LinkedIn profile, as far as being an innovative curriculum designer. What are some of the things that we need to do better? And this is something I don't get an awful lot of opportunity as a curriculum designer myself, as a structural designer. I don't get an awful lot of an opportunity to speak about this. How can we better meet the needs of our students when it comes to our curriculum? Because I think that kind of gets lost in the shuffle sometimes, that students really want to see that the curriculum and what they're actually learning in the classroom is a lot more workplace ready and a lot more designed to be more practical and not so much theory. What are some of the things that you're doing to, and when you're partnering with some of your clients, and what are some of the things that you advise us to do as a sector to be more responsive to that?
Sure thing. Well, I mean, you know, probably as a curriculum designer that you can't just design a course once and have it be done because most fields aren't set in stone and we're learning more and more about them all the time. The type of curriculum that I design is for high school counseling departments, typically for an independent school, that allows them to give their students information about everything from academic success in high school and beyond, career counseling, and a huge portion of the course material for through all 4 years is talking about college, talking about the value of college, being realistic about the costs. And so these are year-long credit-bearing courses that free up those school counselors to have more substantive conversations with their students because they don't have to explain terminology like Stafford loan or need blind or meets full determined need. They don't have to go through all of that. And so one of the needs that I've been trying to address with my clients on the secondary school end is making their human resources in the form of school counselors more effective by providing curriculum for students that informs the student and hopefully the family about really important pieces of preparing for college. And it's a natural fit for my work with higher ed because as part of that curriculum design work, I have back-end access to all of the tools and platforms and really inside information from the school counseling community about how they advise and guide students and their families, where to apply, you know, what scholarship should I accept? What college is the best fit for me? And so this pool of professionals is hugely valuable in terms of helping to inform communications that I do for colleges.
If you think it's time for a change in your community, but more importantly, you want to be the change? An online Master in Public Administration degree from Claremont Lincoln University could be the start. The CLU MPA program has an advisory council of frontline leaders, mayors, school board members, city council members, a state senator, and even a state treasurer, all looking for the next generation of changemakers. In other words, who's next? The real world is calling. A CLU MPA is part of the answer. Find out more at claremontlincoln.edu/MPA.
There's so much to unpack there, because one of the questions that Joe tends to ask, I'm going to go ahead and snatch that question from him and steal his thunder.
How dare you?
Is about the value of college. And I think that one of the things that, I mean, you actually dovetail two things that I think about a lot. The value of college, which Joe always asks, as far as us as a sector, are we becoming less and less valuable? And I guess wanted to have you weigh in on some of the conversations that maybe you're hearing from high school and then leading into some of the work that you do with higher ed as well. But also the fact that a lot of people don't understand, and we had a guest recently that talked about this, the idea that a lot of schools don't have enough resources when it comes to counselors. So we have in higher ed up on our, in our ivory tower, we have this idea, I think sometimes mistakenly some of us, that all K through 12, all high schoolers have the same amount of access to counselors. Everyone's getting prepared. Everyone has, coming from schools that have a ton of different guidance counselors. I know for me, I went to a school, I think we had like two for 2000 students. And I think the average in a lot of these more urban schools is about about one counselor, guidance counselor per 900 students, which is not enough resources. How can we, as a sector, try to understand that a little bit better? And how can we, I guess, in terms of the messaging and the value of college, what are some of the things that you're hearing, and what are some of your thoughts about just what the value of a college education is and how that's maybe evolving and changing as we go into these unforeseen circumstances?
Yeah, I think you make a really valuable point that colleges may assume that students have resources that they don't have. They may not have a parent who ever attended college or a relative that ever attended college, so they can't have those informal conversations around the dinner table, or if they're checking in with a, you know, parent or an uncle or an auntie by text, they can't, you know, ask someone at school to help them. And so we can't assume that they understand what to do or how to do it. And we also can't assume that the communications that we're sending them communicate what we intend. And so the value of college, I think it starts, I mean, not to putting my marketing hat on, I think it starts with marketing communications, to be completely honest, because colleges, I think, are very good at communicating their value. I think that they're not always as good at communicating the path to get to that value being an accessible path. And that turns people off. People are looking at headlines going, colleges cost $70,000 a year, that we can't go to college. It's never going to be worth it. And I've seen folks at excellent colleges feel so frustrated knowing that a lot of students would be eligible for significant financially, but they never have to repay. And so the path for many students is easier than they think. And how can we make them understand that? How can we make them understand what options are available other than communicating more effectively? So when I do financial aid communications, I like to think about what kinds of questions families and students have about financial aid. Like maybe you all can tell me if you had these kinds of questions, but an example of a question I had was, how much can my parents make and I still qualify for financial aid? Or, you know, why are you asking so many questions on my financial aid application? Like, did you all have questions about financial aid when you were younger?
I definitely did. I was a first generation student, so neither of my parents had been to college. So I distinctly have a picture in my head of filling out my financial aid application, not with my parents. I filled it out in school, in my math class, because that was a class that I really hated. And I just sat there, and it was like me and like two other students. Actually, they are like friends that I actually ended up going to college with. And we all sat around in a huddle and tried to ask each other, because we didn't really know how to fill it out. So I watched them fill it out. And I was like, oh, okay, that's how you do that question. I'll do that too. I literally did it on my own, not even with a counselor, with like my little cohort of friends. We all went to college together. So yeah, for sure. I had a lot of questions and no one to provide me with the answers, unfortunately.
Yeah, same. I think from memory, my parents and I did it together. They played a very active role. I got to give props to my mom and dad. They played a very active role in helping me through that process. And they took out
plus loans for me, but I do remember trying to understand how much I actually will owe and what's going to be my situation when I'm done, right? And a big part of the negotiation with my parents through the financial aid process was, we'll help you for 4 and only 4 years. And if you don't finish your degree, you are on your own. you change your major, you better pick carefully. Because if you change your major and you're in school a fifth year or sixth year, you'll be buying those years on your own. And so I finished in 4 years. I did not spend one extra day. And it was because I was scared of debt. I was scared of owing money. Right? They made me scared, rightfully so. And I thank them for it, to have debt. To your point, there's really funny questions in there with the financial aid process that students don't know. Even after they do it and go through it, they still have questions. And they're like, well, wait a second, what just happened there? It's like remember that old Panasonic commercial, the guy sitting in the chair and the wind's blowing his tie back and his hair. That's what the financial aid process is like.
Yeah. So we're agreeing financial aid is a black box, right? It's a complicated piece of equipment. Nobody really knows how it works. It's a mystery. There's all these regulatory issues. So, after working for, 6 years, making financial aid communications for Swarthmore, I just was so in love with trying to translate, if you will, and decipher this really complex, but critical piece of information as students consider college. And so I went to a boot camp course, a week-long boot camp course that the College Board offers for new and returning financial aid directors. And there were hundreds of people in this class, and I was the only communications person there. And I thought that was so interesting that, people who need to communicate and translate this very complicated information maybe don't have a lot of familiarity with it themselves. And so I became pretty passionate about that, as well as looking at it from the students and the family's point of view. And so to me, empathy and knowing your audience, that's the biggest competitive advantage that colleges can have right now when they market. They have to know their audience. And if you thought you knew your audience a year ago, you need to get to know them all over again, because they're totally different now after the economy and the pandemic, et cetera. You need to talk to them differently, especially about money.
Tara, one of the things that I've said to a number of the college presidents we've interviewed, back a year and the pandemic hit and everybody comes out and says, colleges are going to close, enrollment declines are going to be steep, we're going to see, maybe up to a 25% loss of colleges and so on. And it's happened in some respects. There's been some mergers, some affiliations, some shared services agreements and so on, but not as many closures at this point. And a lot of that is due to, operational budgets. You might have a university that is in real severe financial trouble a year ago, but they've got 2 years of operation dollars still left and they're not operating year to year. So we're probably 18 months out, if we go back a year, we're probably 2 years out from seeing a lot of those, another year from now, seeing those colleges close up if their enrollment doesn't increase. A big part of what I've said is, I think, and this is my opinion, that a college that is going to be able to survive and thrive and, whatever the normal is going to be, has to be an ace in digital marketing. So much so that they have to be as good as the big online universities, especially if they're an on-ground brand name university, small private college. If you don't have students lining up at the door anymore, you've got to actively recruit and you've got to go out and find those students. And traditionally, at least from my experience in dealing with colleges and universities, a lot of those smaller private schools don't have a lot of pedigree in active recruitment and digital marketing. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head that it's going to be harder for those schools to get their names out there. And while I agree that digital marketing is more important than ever in terms of budgetary restrictions, I do think that print is far from dead, especially when people are looking at spending hundreds of thousands of dollars over 4 years. So making that type of decision, it's hard to sit across a kitchen table from someone and show them an email that you got on your phone. And so it helps to have some print in the mix, but I do agree that from, just a name recognition point of view, that digital marketing is gonna give you probably longer term bang for your buck in a way that you can be more nimble than you would be with print. Now, in terms of audiences, while you can't forget about students and their families, I feel like there's a huge missed opportunity in communicating with the school counselor and college advisor community. You really need to, talking about budget, making sense, you know, making your budget work for you. Why aren't we investing more in communicating with people who can influence many cycles of applicants, as opposed to spending most of the budget only on the applicants from that 1 year? I'm a big fan of working with school counselors and reaching them, giving them exactly the information that they need to recommend your school to students.
Okay, so let's turn our attention to Karis Communications. Tell us a little bit about what you do at Karis, how you do it, you know, how you, you know, the whole deal, how you work with your clients, how would they go about contacting you and the services that you offer?
Oh, sure. Yeah, thanks for asking. So as we talked about, I work with clients at institutions in higher ed and secondary schools. And so in higher ed, I specialize in admissions and financial aid communications. I have a very deep specialty in doing that for highly selective schools. So these are schools who have maybe a 20 or 15% admit rate or lower. I also have, as I mentioned, deep expertise in industry standard certifications and financial aid. And I'm informed by the curriculum development work I do for college prep high schools. And so what I do is I take all this information and I work with clients who are looking to reimagine their admissions and enrollment communications. If they need help with trying to talk about financial aid differently, reimagining their financial aid letter, maybe they have a tuition reset that is going to be approved by the board and they're concerned about how that might come across to future and current students. Their yield campaign is lagging and they need a pinch hitter to come in and help. All those things I do. I work on retainer, I work on short-term projects, and I'd be happy to talk to anyone who wanted to learn more about how they can improve how they speak to their most important audiences about these tricky topics.
Liz, you want to give her the final two?
Yeah, absolutely. We really appreciate your time. This has been actually really insightful, and I'd love to be able to talk about enrollment and marketing and some of the other areas that we don't get to talk about as much, because those areas are going to be, as Joe always talks about, increasingly important, especially as the market and the type of students and the demographic of students that we are serving continues to change. So we just want to make sure there's nothing else that we haven't touched on. I think you kind of wrapped it up really nicely, but if there's anything else that you just want to mention for our listeners about the services that you provide or some of the things that you maybe want to point out that are really going to be important as we move forward as a sector. And the last thing would be, what do you see as the future for higher education?
Oh, sure. Can I answer your second question first?
Absolutely.
Okay. I think that there's going to be value in higher ed. You know, I don't see that lagging. I think the perception is the problem. And so I think the future of higher ed is going to be in changing the perception, particularly of middle income families. They're the ones that are struggling the most at this point. When you look at the broad swaths, the lower income families are actually able to access aid many times, you know, as long as they have the tools to do so, obviously. But in terms of population, the middle income families are having the hardest time understanding and getting the aid that they need. And so I think communicating the value and also communicating to families, how do you access the aid that you need to make a college education possible for your families? That's the future in higher ed, is making sure that folks know what they need to do and that it's accessible. I also feel like what we may see is colleges getting more comfortable with taking risks. Colleges that would never have offered an online class before, obviously they're figuring out a way to make it work. And I think if a risk was successful, it will encourage them to be more innovative in the future. So I think we're going to be surprised at some of the risks that these you know, institutions made out of granite and marble, what they choose to do. And I think that applies to social justice initiatives as well. I'm looking forward to that coming. The last thing I just, to answer your first question is that I would encourage anyone who's interested in reimagining their communications for families, particularly around aid, to reach out to me. I can very quickly share my thoughts about your existing communications and where I see opportunities for more effective engagement with these students and families. All they want is for someone to explain to them what's possible and how.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Tara. This has been another episode of the Ed Up Experience podcast with Tara Ames Durante, and she is founder and president of Caris Communications. Tara, thank you so much for bringing your and dropping your knowledge on the Ed Up Experience.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Hey, everybody. We hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ed Up Experience. To learn more about the Ed Up Experience, please visit our website at www.edupexperience.com and subscribe to our email list. Please share this podcast, head over to Apple, and please give us a rating and review. We appreciate your feedback. And of course, subscribe to the Ed Up Experience so you're notified when our episodes drop. Here at the Ed Up Experience, our goal is to make education your business. Thanks for listening.